Blog Talk Radio.
Drowning.
last year, the voter ID laws and the long lines and the ending early voting and the stopping Sunday to the polls showed that Jim Crow's son, James Crow Jr. Esquire, is still trying to do what his daddy did, and that's rob us from the right to vote. Joining me now is Larry Ward, chairman of the Gun Appreciation Day campaign. Thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Thanks for having me, Reverend.
Now, so often in this debate, it seems like gun control advocates and opponents don't talk to one another. So I'm kind of looking forward to our conversation.
Me too.
I want to read something you said about why we need Gun Appreciation Day. You said, quote, "We decided that the politicians have forgotten how Americans feel about their guns, and it's time to remind them." How have politicians forgotten how people feel about their guns, Larry?
Well, you know, there's a lot of talk about gun control. This Gun Appreciation Day, just so we're clear, is not in reaction to the shooting in Newtown. It's in reaction to the reactions in terms of the legislation that's being introduced into Congress, Senator Feinstein's bill, and President Obama and Joe Biden's comments that they guaranteed sweeping gun control legislation by the end of the month.
Yes. If the sky falls and it crumbles, we will stand tall despite having to be diverted with talk of banning our guns. This is all part of a major strategy. Nobody's taking any guns away. This is part of a strategy, a systematic strategy to prevent you from voting. And this all started in January 2008 when we elected the first African-American president. This never would have come up. And get real now. We need to put the daggone elephant on the table in the living room. This is the problem. It has nothing to do with Second Amendment. It has to do with your voting. It has to do with the voting rights. It has to do with the Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. They can see. We know who they are. They can see it coming down the road. Texas will be Democratic in less than 20 years. They will not be able to redistrict anymore because they will not be the majority. This is a fact. This is not a warning. This is how it's coming to. This is what it's coming to.
It's demographics.
It's just demographics. So they are trying to throw every single obstacle in the way. And their last bullet, their last major bullet, is the Supreme Court.
Well, that's one thing. What I think, Mike, that you're slightly wrong in the way you phrase it. That it began with Obama being elected. It's coming to a head with Obama being elected because that's that demographic change occurring.
Well, I stand corrected. You're correct.
This has been going on. You know, for decades, if not, you know, since the Civil War. But, I mean, we're talking about the entire, what we're fixing to get into, this whole Civil Rights Act, is, of course, nothing but a, they had to come back almost 100 years later and pass that law to enforce the 15th Amendment, which had already been enacted because it was being ignored, you know. And this entire, There's an entire movement begun for a good 30 years. We're fixing to talk about the court. The court was another bastion that they so they had to take out, you know. They didn't have a chance in all these court cases going against conservatism. But, again, this is ongoing. We've been talking about this for years. They have an agenda for conservatives, and they have been very incrementally, step by step, tearing down things. But let me tell you what. That's one thing I want to say. What she just said about Adele, you have it partially right, partially wrong. She said this is the end. This, I agree with that. And this is the end of functional government.
Absolutely.
Because that's their last stand. Their last stand is if they can't get elected and hold power, they're going to tear the building down.
You're absolutely correct.
And nobody can be there.
And speaking about the Voting Rights Act.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. President, members of the Congress, I speak tonight for the dignity of man and the destiny of democracy. At times, history and fate meet at a single time, in a single place, to shape a turning point in man's unending search for freedom. So it was at Lexington and Concord. So it was a century ago at Appomattox. So it was last week in Selma, Alabama. What happened in Selma is part of a far larger movement which reaches into every section and state of America. It is the effort of American Negroes to secure for themselves the full blessings of American life. Their cause must be our cause, too. Because it's not just Negroes, but really it's all of us who must overcome the crippling legacy of bigotry and injustice. And we shall overcome. Every American citizen must have an equal right to vote. Every device of which human ingenuity is capable has been used to deny this right. The Negro citizen may go to register only to be told that the day is wrong, or the hour is late, or the official in charge is absent. And if he persists, and if he manages to present himself to the registrar, he may be disqualified because he did not spell out his middle name or because he abbreviated a word on the application. And if he manages to fill out an application, he is given a test. The registrar is the sole judge of whether he passes this test. He may be asked to recite the entire Constitution or explain the most complex provisions of state law. And even a college degree cannot be used to prove that he can read and write. For the fact is that the only way to pass these barriers is to show a white skin. In such a case, our duty must be clear to all of us. The Constitution says that no person shall be kept from voting because of his race or his color. We have all sworn an oath before God to support and to defend that Constitution. We must now act in obedience to that oath.
And right now, That's a theme for Perry Mason, who is a great lawyer. We have the general counsel for the Advancement Project, Reverend Edward Hales, on the phone with us. Reverend.
Thanks so much for having me today. How are you?
Well, I thought Perry Mason's theme was the appropriate introduction for you.
Well, you're kind to say that. I consider Thurgood Marshall to be one who inspired me to get involved in civil rights law from the time I was a kid, and I certainly can say that today we've made a lot of progress in making it easier for all Americans to participate in our democracy, but it doesn't mean that the fight is over. We still see efforts to make it harder for people of color in particular to have equal, fair access to the ballot box.
Well, I thought playing a Bell's theme, James Bond theme, Sky Falls, was appropriate because it doesn't matter. It may crumble, but we will stand tall.
That's right.
And we were always going to stand tall, and we will win in the end.
That's right.
And,
you're absolutely right.
What did you think of the short clip I played with President Johnson and his speech where he says that we shall overcome?
Yes, that was a significant speech by a president from the South. It was, I believe, March 15th, 1965, before a joint session of Congress, and it shocked the conscience of other Southerners who probably had never heard that message of unity with African Americans before. Even though people considered the Kennedys a friend to African Americans, no one had heard a president, particularly, and I think noteworthy that he was from the South, would speak up and say words that not only was the theme of the civil rights movement, but he joined in by including himself in the we shall overcome, not just African Americans, but we shall overcome. Because white Americans realize that unless all eligible citizens had a right to participate in our democracy, then they were under the foot of oppression as well. So in order to get from under the hypocrisy that had been spread around the world that America was this great democracy, that they too had to join in the struggle for equal rights and equal justice and a fair, accessible democracy for all.
And no one in that joint session of Congress shouted out, "You lie."
You're absolutely right. That's right. It was, I wasn't there, but you would have heard. You would have heard that. And as he said in that that great speech, it came on the heels of the Bloody Sunday. It came on the heels of violence that people were able to see on their television screens across the nation. People had heard about this struggle for civil rights, but when they saw how peaceful protesters were beaten so brutally, when they saw that on their TV screens, it shocked the conscience of the nation. And on the heels of that, for the President of the United States to give such a dynamic speech and to join in with people of color and saying that we shall overcome, that gave a lot of hope to people who had been oppressed and treated unjustly for so long.
And speaking about Selma, I want to get you to listen to this one thing for a few seconds here.
Selma sprang overnight from an obscure southern town to the front pages of world newspapers. This church was headquarters in the Negro drive for the right to vote. And it was here that Martin Luther King came to lend his support to the campaign. He pointed out that from Selma's 14,000 Negroes, only a few more than 300 had been registered at the polls. When one group set out to march to the Capitol at Montgomery, the procession was broken up violently by state troopers and sheriff's deputies.
On Bloody Sunday, nearly 50 years ago, Jose Williams from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. organization and I led 600 peaceful, nonviolent protesters attempted to march from Selma to Montgomery to dramatize the need for voting rights protection in the state of Alabama, throughout the South, and our nation. As we crossed the Edna Pettus Bridge, we were met by state troopers who shot us with tear gas, beat us with nightsticks, and trampled us with horses. I was hit on the head and suffered a concussion on the bridge. 17 of us went to the hospital on that day, the Good Samaritan Hospital in downtown Selma.
Now, Reverend Hales, that was a short piece explaining what you just said about Selma and how Bloody Sunday, what are some other things that you might be able to tell us about that?
Well, you know, you just brought back something I read just a week ago that connects to an earlier discussion you had about gun violence and the the proliferation of guns across the nation. And I heard a conservative, a well-known conservative talk show, radio talk show host said that if John Lewis had a gun back then, he wouldn't have been beaten in the head. That's the kind of foolishness that we're hearing in these days when we try to have serious conversations about gun control and about voting rights. We hear foolishness instead. We hear even at the level of the Supreme Court, a justice claiming that the Voting Rights Act, Section 5, may be a perpetuation of racial entitlement. We're trying to have a serious discussion.
Reverend Hales, you're not supposed to take my questions before and answer them before I even ask them.
Okay, go ahead. Ask me a question. Go ahead. Ask me a question. You just got me fired up. You got me fired up. Let me calm down. Let me calm down.
the thing is, before you get there, before I ask that question that you have answered already, can you explain to the audience what is the Voting Rights Act and why did we ever need it?
Well, I think President Lyndon Baines Johnson captured it very dramatically in that speech. That for over 100 years, despite the enactment of the 14th and 15th Amendments to the United States Constitution, African Americans continued to have their voting rights eradicated, eliminated, had them suppressed, because of practices that were put in place in the South. And the United States Congress, which has the authority to ensure that the protections and the prohibitions and the provisions of the Constitution are fully empowered, put a record before the American public that proved unequivocally that African Americans were unable to participate equally in our democracy, and that in order to overcome the shameful history of the country, there had to be legislation in place that empowered the government to push the states to ensure those rights were protected. And so that's where we got the Voting Rights Act in 1965. and knowing that it's often difficult to prove discrimination after the fact, Congress said that we need a particular provision in the Constitution that requires states, counties, and jurisdictions to submit the changes they have in mind to put into effect before they put them into effect, so that the Department of Justice or the United States Court, District Court for the District of Columbia, could review those potential changes to see if they would have a harmful impact on people of color in particular. And if those proposed changes would not harm people of color disproportionately, then it was okay to let them go through. And that's what Section 5 has been so important over the years in making sure that before discrimination occurred, they were reviewed. So the Congress has had an opportunity to review the evidence to see if these jurisdictions have done well enough to no longer have this preclearance provision, if they could just simply make all the changes that they want to make. But they each time in 1970, in 1975, 1982, and then again in 2006, after looking at all of the evidence, the Congress, the United States Congress, voted to keep this protection in place. And that's why we still have the Voting Rights Act.
And the thing is that there's an original 9 states, I understand, Arizona, Texas, Arkansas, Georgia, Louisiana, Alabama, South Carolina, and Virginia, I believe. Yeah, that's pretty good. I knew all about it. But anyway, the thing is that there, over the past, since 1965, there, as you just explained, there is a provision where counties can opt out of this preclearance if
that's
they
right.
show that they can, that they have fulfilled these laws, that they have provided the clear and present availability for people to vote. And according to what I understand, there's been over 240 counties that have opted out and are no longer under the preclearance.
That's absolutely right.
And the thing is that this Shelby versus Holder, Shelby is one of the worst violators of all the states, if you can say that. I mean, they've had over, I believe, 15 violations in the last 4 years of the Voting Rights Act. And now they want to advocate out?
I know. Isn't that amazing? In fact, Justice Sotomayor made that very point, that there may be progress in many states that are covered by the Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. This is not one of them. Shelby County is not one of them.
Now,
that's one of the reasons that you have to keep reauthorizing that.
Right.
And
the thing is, now Thomas, my senior producer here, he is from Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
And,
yeah.
The
that's more to say than that.
he doesn't even want to fly over the state.
Yeah.
I mean, he's in an airplane.
Once you escape, you don't want to go back.
All right.
The thing is that which state was it? Was it Alabama or Mississippi that had a black African American running for office? He won, and then they nullified it and redistricted, and it had another election, and he lost. Was that Mississippi, Alabama?
They had a fake election. They lost, and then the courts came in and threw it out, and they had a forced
election,
and
he won.
And he won again.
Yeah, he won again.
So, yeah,
right.
You know, but no, I think that was Alabama.
That was Alabama?
Yeah.
Okay, so, one of the things that...
Mississippi's just fingers for its damn.
Yeah. Now we're going to get to one of my favorite things that you, Reverend Hales, that were... took it upon yourself to go ahead of everybody here. And what is a racial entitlement? Explain to me, everybody else. What is a racial entitlement?
That is something that you deserve, you qualify for no other reason than your race, your skin color. And, yeah, that's how I would define a racial entitlement.
Now, we're in a position now.
Well, let me say something real quick, Mike, because this is kind of irritating me immensely. We're in an all new era of regression here, because these guys are desperate, I guess, and they're going all out. You know, let's reverse course and fly straight back in time, and you know, go full tilt back into everything bad. But one of the things that I want to reiterate out of Lyndon Johnson's mouth, that he said, that I love the fact that Obama does, is these guys, now we're talking, even the Voting Rights Act, it was 100 years after the amendments and the Civil War settled the whole issue, but yet they were still having to go back a century later and fix it because these Southern states weren't honoring it. They weren't doing the right thing. But one thing that Lyndon does, you know, you were saying earlier how he said, we. You know, he included himself in there. He was a Southern white politician, yet he was saying, we must do the right thing. We're all in this together. I love if you want to put it this way, but the post-racialism of it, it's just we're Americans, and guess what? We're all citizens, and all citizens have equal rights. And that was one of his statements, citizens.
Yeah.
That's what I'm so tired. Every time we start to move beyond, just like with President Obama, when he acts so completely neutral in the loop and tries desperately not to ever bring race into any discussion, you have these troglodytes that keep running back up and dragging the country backwards.
You're right.
I'm just tired of it. It's like, how many hundreds of years do we have to address the same thing or whatever? And this is where we get to Scalia now. This guy has been put on the court, and here he comes out with the most stupid statement I've ever heard of.
Well, speaking about troglodytes, and we talk about Scalia, that whenever a society adopts racial entitlements, it is very difficult to get out of them through the normal political processes.
Mm-hmm.
What the heck does that mean? I mean, well, what normal political processes? You mean to tell me that the elected representatives in the United States House, who are elected by the people and decide that they want this after voting in the Senate 98-0, they're wrong because they can't get out of it?
That's a huge problem. The Congress not only voted that way, they had over 15,000 pages of evidence to review, over 50 witnesses from both sides, those who said that we need to continue it and those that said, no, we need to get rid of it. And they looked at all of that and then voted 98-0. And in such super majorities in the House and the Senate, and what I know and have learned both in law school and in my career, that the court, in particular the Supreme Court, is not supposed to substitute its judgment from the original fact finder, which in this case is the Congress. They cannot say, unless they decide to resign their seats on the Supreme Court, run for Congress, get elected, and then make their own and cast their own votes after reviewing the evidence, the 15,000 pages of evidence, can say that Congress was wrong.
Well, yes, this is true. I mean, isn't this what the regressive party and conservatives keep telling us liberals, you want activist judges?
Exactly.
I mean, You know, and the thing is that the problem we're going to have with the Supreme Court is the racist Scalia, but we also have the man who's so nice and so charming on the court, the Chief Justice, who was appointed by Ronald Reagan to specifically find every loophole in the Voting Rights Act 30 years ago. And he's been trying to get rid of the Voting Rights Act for 30 years.
Right, right.
So we know we don't have their yes votes. Yes, their yes votes. I mean, but this is now, since no one, not even God, it seems, can tell a Supreme Court judge what to do,
right,
should they, by the mere fact of their positions, recuse themselves like they wanted, who was it, Sotomayor or Tate, to recuse themselves because they were involved in a case before they got to the Supreme Court?
That's right. That's right.
I mean, is that even a possibility? Has it even come up that they should recuse themselves?
No, it hasn't come up.
That would be like having one of their wives be a lobbyist.
Yeah, exactly, right.
That's another story. We haven't gotten to the spook that sat by the door, Clarence Thomas. So, yeah, we're not even going to talk about him.
No.
But the thing is that what is your gut feel of how the oral arguments went yesterday, on Wednesday?
So my sense is that that it's unclear. I'm hopeful only because when we look back at the last Supreme Court case that looked directly at Section 5, the pundits and the media predicted, based on what they heard in court, that the justices were going to eviscerate Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. That didn't happen. And so when I listened to the pundits, when I listened to some folks in the media say that it looks like Justice Kennedy was leaning on the side of the conservatives and it may be a 5-4 decision, I don't think that's necessarily the case. He asked some questions that, in my mind, make it unclear where he actually stands. But I think if they go back to, as you mentioned before, we not wanting that historical sort of precedent of being an activist court. When I think about looking at the unclean hands of Shelby County, and they could easily say, well, you know, we may have to look at this in the future if we have a better set of facts and a better plaintiff, because this Shelby County, which has so many acts of discrimination in the past anyway, and the fact that it came out in court that over 80% of the Section 2 cases, not Section 5, so out of all of the cases, because you could file lawsuits under the Voting Rights Act, under Section 2, if you can show a practice or policy of discrimination against voters of color, you could do that in any county, state across the country.
Before you go on, explain what Section 2 is.
Okay, so that's the Section 2 protects voters against discrimination, and you can mount a case under Section 2 regardless of whether the state is in a covered county, a covered jurisdiction. And so 80% of the cases that are filed under Section 2 are in Section 5 counties. So that lets you know that there's that, I call it the family history of discrimination. And that's what the Congress looked to see. Look, these are the places that need extra special scrutiny. When you have that family history, then you begin to say we need a cure in those particular jurisdictions. So, again, I'm hopeful. I think something else that's pretty important for us to consider. In the 2012 election cycle, there was an unprecedented spate of new legislative proposals to make it harder for African Americans, Latino, Asian Pacific Americans, and Native Americans, elderly people, to cast ballots to count.
Yeah.
And because they put these proposals in place, there was such a fight back strategy that people turned out in numbers that were unexpected. There was sort of people who were not all of that enthusiastic about supporting the president as they were in 2008. But when they saw this effort to take away their voting rights, they turned out in large numbers.
Right.
And so I think the court has to be mindful, if we strip away this very important voting rights provision, then what will this growing demographic, you all mentioned that before, this growing demographic of our country do to fight back against what they will see as a transparent effort to undermine their authority as citizens in our country? So I think that that's going to be on the minds of Supreme Court justices. They won't say that, but I think they have to be mindful after seeing what happened in 2012 when people stood in long lines, like the 102-year-old Dessalene Victor in Miami. Those are the kind of non-legal understandings that I believe creep into the decision-making process as well.
Well, what do you think, though, if it does go through? Now, if it does go through, you're absolutely right, because we spoke about this the last time I had you on the show, and this came up, and the people got out in the street because their rights were now being affected. Now, the thing is, though, what happens, what would it say to the courts if they turn this Section 5 out and kick it out, and then it lands, the people up do an uprising with their registered representatives and have the Congress, because the Congress can pass a law to override the Supreme Court, correct?
That's exactly right. That's right.
Now, what happened?
And we have seen that before. We have seen that before where the Supreme Court has ruled to strike down a congressional enactment. Congress has come back and said, look, we're going to make it stronger, and that could happen too. And
then,
which is why we think at Advancement Project that we have to continue to build a movement in support of of an explicit affirmative constitutional right to vote for all citizens over the age of 18. We don't have that in our Constitution. It's not expressed as explicitly as in the constitutions of most democratic nations around the country, including South Africa, and that's so. We know that this is not the end. This is not the end of the fight, regardless of the outcome. And we're hopeful. We're expecting that Section 5 will be upheld, but that's not going to end the fight. Already in states, we're beginning to see new restrictive photo ID requirements put in place, new restrictions on early voting, ways to make it harder for people to register to vote. So we know that our fight will still continue.
Well, the thing is that if that happens, the John Roberts Court will be infamous. It won't be famous.
Yeah.
That's
it
right.
It will be infamous.
Yeah.
That's the right word.
And he, as the youngest person there, will be there to suffer that for his entire judicial career.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
So is he there thinking now, because he wants to make this his Supreme Court. And if he wants to make it his Supreme Court by making this decision, it will be his Supreme Court.
That's exactly right.
Nobody else will remember anybody but John Roberts.
You're right.
And the thing is that if you hear a lot of these pundits say there is no right to vote in the Constitution.
Well, we don't say there's no right. We say it's not explicit, it's not affirmative. There is an implicit right to vote that prevents states from giving discriminating against, for example, African Americans, other people of color, against women. But it's more of a negative sense that you can't do this. But in other countries, the Constitution says plainly and simply, and many states have this provision in their state constitutions too, that every citizen over the age of 18 has the right to vote. That's the language we don't have in our Constitution. And so we have 13,000 jurisdictions that administer elections in different ways, interpreting laws in different ways.
And why? I mean, why was it that way? Why wasn't it uniform? Do we know why?
Well, we don't know exactly, but we know that whenever you try to get a law or especially a constitutional amendment or the Constitution itself, there's always some fights over who will get the benefit, the power that comes from that language. And so there's always those compromises that keep some of the best provisions out of the documents that then have to be interpreted by later generations. And those interpretations vary, they differ, and often don't protect everyone equally.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just a watering down of the laws. But look, with the Voting Rights Act, one of the things we looked up in the research on this, you know, we were looking at the history of it, and one of the neat things that we ran across was a statement that said, right as the act was passed, it had immediate impact. They said within the year it was enacted, 250,000 new black voters were registered.
Yep.
And by the next year, just 1 year later, out of all of those 13 southern states affected, only four of them still had a white majority in voting. That African Americans had become the majority in every one of those states. So, I mean, this was a real thing that they were being their votes were being withheld, tampered with, held down, whatever you want to say, and that it corrected a mistake because you see
that's
it within 12 months. I mean, instantaneously. So, given that this is a viable corrective act, it was reinforcing, you know, an amendment to the Constitution which had already been passed. But anyway, it corrected the problem. It had a solution, and it was having an effect. So we see that in politics, in races going forward. And now we've reached a point where, as we said, with the demographic shifts, the Republicans seem to be on the ropes, basically, and this is their last-ditch effort.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you had any thoughts on the because I study, you know, I like to study politics, so you know, I read a lot more than the average person. But I've been studying these guys for decades now, and they've got a far-reaching plan. You know, this whole the Southern strategy, the everything else. You know, they're all part of the whole. This isn't just, you know, accidental. It just popped up, you know, this January. You know, in between the cliff and the sequester. Hey, let's look at this voting thing. Like Mike referred to earlier, people like John Roberts, you know, Scalia and all that. They the conservative movement, since the Voting Rights Act actually went through, have been trying to counteract it. And they've been trying to put people into government and put people onto the courts for decades to counter this entire movement. So do you see this as their last gasp or the fruition of all their plans or a true reversal? I mean, is this going to be the death knell for voting rights, or is this going to be simply, literally, their last gasp when they hit the wall and there's nothing more they can do for the tide of history?
Yeah, I think there's so much truth and validity in what you just said based on the historical record and the current statements that we see in the media, and not just among these right-wing talk show hosts. I remember a few years ago when Senator Shelby from Alabama switched parties from from the Democrat to Republican, and he made a statement that he didn't think that enough white citizens were looking at the fact that soon they would become a minority. And I always remember hearing that statement, and I said, that's more of a warning than just an assessment. But now, it's like we need to do something about it. And in this last election cycle, we began to hear the state legislator in Pennsylvania saying that we got this restrictive voter ID requirement in place, so now Romney can win the state. So it's they know what the impact will be of trying to strip away voting rights from communities of color in order to keep the power that is quickly dwindling. And they see it, they know it, and they want to at least try to stop it, because inevitably we're moving to a nation that will look a lot different than it has in the past.
Tell us a few of the things that the Advancement Project is doing now and is looking at, because what might happen in the decision in June.
Yeah. Well, we're still involved in litigation from 2012 in Pennsylvania and in Wisconsin. You know, these cases take a long time, and we were able to working with our partners get the courts to prevent the laws from going into effect, but they still have to be tried, and decisions have to be rendered. So we're still involved in those cases. We've gone to Florida, and we've worked with our local partners to introduce legislation in the state to actually establish a right to vote there in Florida. We're looking at different ways to see we talk about the bailout provisions in the Voting Rights Act, so that if there are jurisdictions in the covered that are covered by Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, get rid of that discrimination, they can bail out of being covered. But there's also bail-in provisions for other states who are not currently covered to be covered. So when we think about what we see in Ohio and Pennsylvania and in Florida, we certainly say we need to start looking closely at what we can do to have these states bailed in. So we're doing a lot of research, analysis, meeting with our local partners, trying to figure out what they want to do and how we can assist.
Wait. One other thing I want to ask you real quick, because, studying these trends and looking at them, just like I said, over the years, I've seen this over and over again. People get startled after elections because of the Republicans can come through just immediately with a whole bunch of changes, a whole bunch of new laws, a flurry of new activity, and people are just shocked, you know.
You're right.
But they are not aware. These guys have been think tanking and, organizing behind the scenes for decades sometimes.
You're right.
And they have these things on the shelves ready to go. And
you're absolutely right.
I'm heartened to hear you say, I mean, y'all are paying attention to this, because it's like Mike and I were saying earlier, you know, it's like stamping out fires or, you know, fire ants spreading across the floor. Every time you think you've taken care of it, it crops up somewhere else over and over and over. They just keep at it, at the same idea, you know, over and over and over and over, no matter how many times you put a kibosh on it. And I think it's extremely important if y'all could do everything possible to help not just fight these fights for us, but to educate people.
You're right.
Because after this many years, hey, guess what? It ain't a surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Brother Lawson knows that, you know, I wear my legal hat, but I had the opportunity in this past election cycle to be on calls with pastors from around the country who are very interested in getting information far in advance of the election to share with their congregations, materials they've asked us to give them that put in very simple language what the barriers are, what the fight back strategy was, and we want to continue to do that. So folks at every level are getting the information they need, staying alert, staying excited about voting. We can do so much. We have so much power, and to lose that by giving in to these barriers is what the other side wants us to do. So we got to keep people not only informed, we have to keep them fired up and inspired and seeing themselves as this mighty army that can make a big difference.
Well, the main thing that Mike and I have fought for over and over here in North Carolina that infuriates me the most, it's hard enough to fight against these guys actually trying to take your rights and take your power, but when people simply don't show up,
right.
Apathy is a killer, and it infuriates.
Oh, yeah.
Because
you're right.
As soon as you quit paying attention, they come in the back door, and then they slap that change right on the table that they've been holding.
Well,
right.
I want to thank the General Counsel for the Advancement Project. I know he's so busy, and he is our adapted General Counsel here at The Last Word.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I appreciate the music. I appreciate the speech. I appreciate all of you, and thanks so much for having me.
I want to thank you, and we will be in touch.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, because I know there's going to be a lot of explaining Scalia is going to have to do.
There you go. All right. Take good care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye for now.
It is so important.
And that was just so easy to get a connection. Hey, I think that's a site. So, you know, maybe we could dial in again. It's wobbling in there, and we're going.
That's okay. It's the technology of the age. Yeah, but the good news is, hey man,
yeah.
We can have these conversations nationwide with all these people right here on the computer. This is
well, hey, I want to tell you that Reverend Hales knows his stuff, and I am quite thankful that we could get him on the show to explain some stuff to us.
Well, the thing is, I'm quite thankful that he's out there fighting this fight every day.
Yeah. Every day he's fighting.
People got to pay attention, or you're going to lose your rights.
You're going to lose your rights.
They're trying to put you back 1965 all over again.
Well, there was he had mentioned about this outrageous, and I'm going to say it, racist on the Supreme Court, Antonin Scalia. And he thinks he is untouchable. And he is, so to speak, but every time he opens his mouth and the race nonsense comes out of it, ooh, that was me, we see how far he has gone.
Yes.
And he has gone off the deep end now.
Well, one of my favorite interviews with him, the guy was talking to him, you know, the reporter did. And Scalia went on this whole long talk about how the Constitution is not living.
Yeah.
It's not a living, breathing document.
Right.
It's dead.
Well, I learned that growing up in school. It was a living, breathing document.
Exactly. And that's the way the founding fathers envisioned it. Because, you know, if it ain't living, it is dead. And
that's
it's
right.
Over and done with. And, you know, what we call that? We call that, you know, ancient Rome or,
right.
or ancient Persia.
That's
or
right.
anything else that's, you know.
Before ancient.
You know, yeah. Well, you know that famous poem, Ozymandias? You know, there's nothing but a crumbling statue in the middle of the desert, right? Okay. But listen, if it's a living document, it's a living country.
Absolutely.
It's got to change. And the thing that infuriates me the most, though, is he said in that, that he didn't even believe that amendments were valid, that there could be no change to the original thing. So if you take that, then basically what his view is, y'all, two-thirds of man and slaves or whatever. You know, if you go back to the nothing but the original, you know, ink drawing on the first page that was written, give me a break. You've got to have a living document to have a living nation. And if this fossil has its stone brain on that, fixated that way, that there can be nothing changed, then no wonder he says things like this, that any progress at all is, you know, some entitlement to something like that.
Well, it's just like this.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Yeah, there you go.
That's my case.
Right from the mouth itself.
Now, to understand this, what we were talking about, in case most people didn't hear what went on, with Scalia, and I'll read it from the beginning. I read some of this in the very beginning before, but I want to read it again. Scalia, whatever a society adopts racial entitlements, it's very difficult to cut out, to get out that, read this again, blah, 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 blah. Whatever a society adopts racial entitlements, it is very difficult to get out of them through the normal political processes. And then he said, which is what he meant by that was that the entitlements to him is nothing that the Congress should handle. But Justice Kagan directed a question at him and mentioning his name, which they do not do on the court.
They broke
protocol. She said it was clear to 98 senators in 2006, including every senator from the covered states, that's all nine of those states, that there was a continuing need for this legislation.
That's one of the things that infuriates me, too. They keep saying like it's just out of nowhere.
Oh.
This was a correction to fix the non-enforcement of the 15th. Amendment that had already been there for 100 years. Then the correction was reviewed and reauthorized over and over and over and over again by Democrats and Republicans for decades. So this is not just out of imaginary, pulled out of a hat. This is with evidence, with constant review, with constant reauthorization. It has been revalidated over.
But you know, what's worse than that was that it was renewed for 6 years, then it was renewed another 6 years, but the next time they came, they renewed it for 25 years.
Yeah.
And then under George W. Bush in 2006, they again renewed it for 25 years. So they want to circumvent the 25 years we have right now.
Of course.
And
that's what this is all about.
Absolutely.
Talking about, you know, your power grabs away.
Right.
It is like taking people's rights away. It's the same reason they're going around limiting the time you can vote and how you can vote and what kind of IDs you have to hand.
Kagan, after she directed her question at Justice Scalia, do you know what Scalia said?
What?
Let me read what she said first. I'll put it in context. It was clear to 98 senators in 2006, including every senator from the covered states, that there was a continuing need for this legislation. Scalia's answer, or decided that they better perhaps not vote against it. saying that maybe if they voted against it, they wouldn't get elected again. Well, yes, because this is a representative republic. This is not a dictatorship. We tell them what to do. They don't tell us what to do.
Right.
I mean, where is this man?
So basically, this genius is saying, oh, yeah, or maybe they're following the will of the people.
Yeah. Oh, gee, my God.
You know,
we need to stop the presses. What kind of country is this?
They're following the will of the people.
And then this racist, this is the bigotry and outrage which has finally shown its ugly head in our Supreme Court. Scalia then went further because, you know, he is the king. Unlike Ron Paul, who said that President Obama was the king. Okay. This is not the kind of question you can lead to Congress. Even the name is wonderful. The Voting Rights Act.
Right.
Who's going to vote against that? Now, this is outrageous. The will of the people elect a representative.
Mm-hmm.
And those representatives in our 50 states voted to have this enforced.
Right.
And he says, no, you can't leave it up to them. Now, there were times where the Supreme Court decided on laws that affected the minority and not the majority. You know, the old Star Trek thing, does the need of the many outweigh the need of the few?
No, I mean,
so when it comes to the Voting Rights Act, the need of the few outweighs the need of the many. But in this case, he's the few, and he wants to outweigh the need of the many.
Well, this is the thing. Right, and that's it. I mean, you're getting angry, and you're saying it right.
Oh, really?
The problem is, they even in those cases, the court simply reaffirmed the constitutionality of something. They didn't make a law ever.
That's right.
But they would say, hey, this law taking rights away from somebody is wrong. This law giving rights to people is right, or whatever. They would decide sometimes against the tide of the times, but they always went with the Constitution.
With the Constitution.
Right. For
right.
People.
Right.
And what they're wanting to do is the exact opposite of that.
Right.
But listen, this is one of the things, you know, I mentioned with him earlier, the Reverend, you know, these guys have been working on this for years to get people into every level of government from, you know, counties all the way up to the Congress. But because of demographics or because they're just troglodytes, either way, they can't always win. They often don't. And, you know, there was, back about 20 years ago, a big movement in there. They said, we can't win the Congress. It's too hard. There's too many, you know, we can't win hundreds of seats and do what we want with laws. And they literally said in their think tank, it's easier to take out 12 people. So they went after the court. Because that's the final arbiter. And if they can put a racist like this on the final say, hey, is it constitutional? No, I don't like the racial entitlements to all them other people. You know, if that was easier than getting, you know, 400 people elected that year or whatever, right? So, you know, bravo, job well done. But it's insidious. And I need people to wake up and start paying attention because it infuriates me.
Well,
we even had that happen in our state with these.
Oh, we're gonna get to that. Hey, you know, how about Ann Coulter?
Oh,
Ann Coulter, skinny, no good. So she is skinnier than most Biafra babies who were starving that I have ever seen. I mean, and she is so moronic. She is now going up the deep end. She must be trying to sell another book.
I have to tell you, this is one of the most racist things I've heard in years. I can't believe it.
I hope you people have heard it out there.
This is a joke.
At first I thought it was a joke, but I Googled it, and I went ballistic trying to find this out, and this ain't no joke. Let me just read this to you. Ann Coulter. Conservative commentator and author Ann Coulter refused to say.
Got to correct you. Author is in quotes. Plagiarist would be more.
But plagiarist. Okay. I'm sorry. Author and plagiarist refused to stay on board a Miami to New York commercial airline flight after learning that the pilot was a woman of African American descent. According to witnesses' reports, Coulter was concerned the experience. Decorated pilot in question may have gained her position as a result of affirmative action and wasn't fully qualified to fly.
It's like they just dropped by, you know, a corner in some city somewhere and said, hey, you, are you black?
Well, wait a minute. What are we talking about? We got a guy who's black on the Supreme Court who's not qualified for the Supreme Court. He never, ever, ever has ever been inside a courtroom prosecuting or defending a case. Never, ever, ever, ever. Now, we all know you do not have to be a judge to be on the Supreme Court. Yeah.
Well,
you don't have to be a legal arbiter. Hey, in North Carolina, you can't be a judge unless you are a lawyer.
But you know what?
No. In New York State, you don't. New York and North Carolina, you have to be a judge, I should say, in order to be, you have to be a lawyer in order to be a judge.
Right. Because you have to know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but there's a lot of states, and New York State is one of them, where you don't have to be a lawyer to be a judge.
That's weird.
And some of them counties up there, some of those judges are not lawyers.
Well,
so it's not uniform.
Well, let me tell you this from this story. I got relatives that are pilots. You can't fly unless you know how. We're going to pick you because you're black.
Well, the Al-Qaeda pilots. The Al-Qaeda pilots couldn't fly.
Oh, please.
They could fly into buildings.
Please.
But we digress. Let me go on.
Look,
The incident began when Coulter boarded an American Airlines flight and took up her first class seat, After a trip to the bathroom, she noticed the pilot.
First class, we call that the lavatory.
Oh, the lavatory. I'm sorry. Yes. Because maybe it has a TV in there. She noticed the pilot was a black woman and became immediately distraught. Well, maybe she wasn't the pilot. Maybe she was the cleaning woman. How did she know?
Actually, she just brought the pancake.
Yes. According to passengers, at that point, Coulter stood at the front of the cabin and began screaming her concerns to the entire flight as they finished boarding. Come on, people. A black woman flying a plane? You know she got that job through affirmative action. Am I the only one worried about this? I mean, hello? Our lives are at stake.
This is insanity, man.
The confused passengers weren't sure what to make of Coulter's outburst and remained completely silent. First of all, they didn't know what else she was. They said, get this woman the hell out of here.
Yeah, this is psycho.
Really? So you're not going to let this, you're going to let this happen? We're going to let political correctness determine our safety? Is this what we've come to in an Obama America, letting just anybody fly a plane out of fear of being called a racist?
See, that reinforces my earlier statement. It wasn't just anybody driving by the corner. Apparently, it was Obama in the limousine from the White House.
That's right.
Hey, you black lady.
Yes, you
black lady. Come get in the plane.
Get the plane, quiet.
What's
next? Are we going to let Mexicans become doctors now? Jesus Christ, he says. She got them both mixed up. Realizing her efforts to provide a mutiny had come to naught.
Is that a terrorist act?
Is a terrorist act. Coulter then took her carry-on bags and bolted back up the jetway towards the gate against orders of the flight attendant. That is a federal offense.
Right.
Okay.
The one she looked for, the white sheet airways?
Right. In reality, the pilot of the plane was a trained U.S. Air Force decorated veteran of Iraq and the Afghanistan wars, where she flew aerial refueling missions for transport and reconnaissance aircraft. She had been flying for American Airlines for 4 years and is one of the airline's most experienced 737 pilots.
So, again, a pilot is a pilot because they're trained to fly.
Okay.
And not only was this just a regular little, I'm trained to fly American Airlines, went to school, took my test, got certified, got a bunch of hours type girl. This is one of a decorated veteran.
He said it. He said it.
How could you ask for a better pilot ever? I mean,
John Wayne maybe. After the incident, Coulter was taken in for questioning. Of course, she better have been, because violating the instructions of flight attendants is a federal offense. Law enforcement officials, however, said no charges will be filed. Because she needs to go to the insane asylum.
Yeah.
It says clearly, the official said, this woman has some sort of mental illness, explains TSA spokesperson Dirk
Diggler. What a name. That's
we recommended against pressing charges, and mandated a full psychiatric evaluation.
Coulter in the
mandated. Water. Could you see her in a straitjacket? But she would get out. She is so thin the straitjacket couldn't be tight enough.
When they put it on,
she
slithered
out.
I like that. Slithered out. Yeah.
Coulter is unapologetic about her actions, and her statement released on her official Tumblr, she defended her decision to stay off the plane. I made the best decision I could with the information I had at the time. I'm not going to risk my life for the sake of some liberal fantasy of equality. And she was taken into the insane asylum.
Hey.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Now, I don't think this was all her fault. Apparently,
no, she's brain dead.
She was on Oxycontin. That I guess she'd gotten leftovers.
Oh, from the right?
Talk shows.
Yes.
But in what world can you do something like that? Now, let me turn this on its head. If you were a random black guy who, wandered in off the street all scruffy and with your pants hanging down, because, that's all the way you look, right? And you've probably been to prison 40 times. And
at least.
That's because that's
only 40?
So if you wandered into the airplane and said, oh, my God, look at the white people flying the airplane.
Oh, my God.
And then you
what am I going to do?
The aisle, knocking over all the flight attendants and running out in violation of
you think you
law.
Wouldn't be shot?
Yeah, thank you.
And you would be shot.
Do you think you would have just been talked to and let go?
Hell no. You kidding me?
They would have had the x-ray machine up your,
Absolutely. This is just so outrageous.
This is complete and utter unadulterated racism right here. This is unbelievable.
I mean,
if this girl keeps her job, I can't believe
it. No, she doesn't have a job. Her book is here. His new book is out, but I'm not going to read it because I'm not giving her any credit for it. Later for that. Just
clean sheets, another point and a half.
Yeah, and just that reminds me, just listen to this.
The seeds are being planted right now for the destruction of the House Republican majority. They're being planted.
We haven't even talked about guns.
They are sworn in today. We haven't even talked about Sandy Hook. We haven't talked about.
Think about that.
Being wrapped as the party of Wayne LaPierre instead of the party of Ronald Reagan. The extremism that is going to be wrapped around this party. The men and women being sworn in today start behind the eight ball. They are already on their way to making Nancy Pelosi the next Speaker of the House.
Neil Malik, I am hoping that Joe Scarborough is right, that there is a colossal price to pay for inaction on what the president calls keeping our children safe in schools.
Well,
it's a a vast left-wing conspiracy, Mike.
Listen.
The New York Jets. No, I'm going to hold you to an answer on that. What makes America the greatest country in the world?
Well, Lewis and Sharon said it, diversity and opportunity and freedom and freedom.
I'm not letting you go back to the airport without answering the question.
Well, our Constitution is a masterpiece. James Madison was a genius. The Declaration of Independence is, for me, the single greatest piece of American writing.
You don't look satisfied. One's a set of laws and the other's a declaration of war. I want a human moment from you. What about the people? Why is America
not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer.
You're saying...
Yes.
Let's talk about...
Fine. Sharon, the NEA is a loser. Yeah, it accounts for a penny out of our paycheck, but he gets to hit you with it any time he wants. It doesn't cost money. It costs votes. It costs airtime and column inches. You know why people don't like liberals? Because they lose. If liberals are so fucking smart, how come they lose so goddamn always?
Hey.
And with a straight face, you're going to tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom? Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yeah, you, sorority girl, just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only 3 categories. Number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period, generation, period, ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Yosemite? Sure used to be. We stood up for what was right. We fought for moral reasons. We passed laws, struck down laws for moral reasons. We waged wars on poverty, not poor people. We sacrificed. We cared about our neighbors. We put our money where our mouths were, and we never beat our chest. We built great big things, made ungodly technological advances, explored the universe, cured diseases, and we cultivated the world's greatest artists and the world's greatest economy. We reached for the stars, acted like men. We aspired to intelligence. We didn't belittle it. It didn't make us feel inferior. We didn't identify ourselves by who we voted for in the last election, and we didn't scare so easy. We were able to be all these things and do all these things because we were informed by great men, men who were revered. First step in solving any problem is recognizing there is one. America is not the greatest country in the world anymore. Enough?
Okay. We're not the greatest country in the world anymore. And we won't be until we stop this nonsense. What did it say about Scalia up there?
Oh, Scalia continued on today saying that, it's all entitlement and this and that and the other. And then he made the statement that Massachusetts had the greatest disparity of blacks not being able to vote and whatnot, which is completely false.
Of course.
Massachusetts came on and disputed him today. because it's just an old racial
system. That's the Chief Justice. Routes.
So, you know, when you said it's very disturbing, and by the way, we're talking about this is on news right now, breaking news. They're just talking about what happened.
Well, that means if Massachusetts had the worst disparity, they need to put them under a precarious
right.
law.
But
if they want to get rid of the precarious, they can't do it.
But it's not true.
Of course it wasn't true.
And the point is, he's trying to give an excuse as to why the southern states
right.
shouldn't be there, that all the northern states are worse.
Right.
That's
right.
the excuse, see, well, but it's just BS to begin with. But, again, back to our point, the court is supposed to look at the constitutionality of a law and not start throwing out statements, accusations, wild opinion, trying to sway the opinion of the people.
When he tried to, when the president, rightfully and foresighted as it was, saying, "Hey, the Citizens United is going to open the floodgates to everything," mm-hmm. and what did that moron do back there? Say, "No, not true." Well, what the hell happened? Mm-hmm. And just don't keep talking about that moo-moo from Vegas that has all those casinos in the Sheldon Adelson. I mean, the Bloomberg says, you know what? If Sheldon Adelson can do it, we can do it on the Democratic side. And he went there and kicked that butt of that Democratic NRA member who was running away from our NRA membership in Chicago to get that seat, but people didn't forget.
Nope.
And she lost.
But see, this is one of the things that the Republicans get caught on. They, you know, they didn't quite call up to this modern era yet. And every time they say something, just like during the election, Mr. Romney with his, "I don't give a rat's ass about the half of the people." They're
47%.
You know, well, guess what? Everything now is recorded. There's a record.
That's right.
So every time you tweet, or you insult somebody in the Supreme Court, even, it's on record. And that's the difference. Now we have it, and now we won't forget it.
And
will we, Ann Coulter? We won't forget.
We will not forget. And, you know, what is ever happening? Yes, it's that wonderful section that we all like to talk about.
The Munster.
Paul Eddie Munster Ryan. Whatever happened to him?
I think he fell and stabbed himself on his widow's peak.
Well, he is, I guess, been told to be seen and not heard.
Well,
we haven't heard from him.
I wished, and I said this back then, that when you run for president or vice president, you have to give up your seat in Congress.
Well,
that would solve a lot of these problems. Anyway,
if I can find it on my Twitter here, there was something about Eddie Munster.
Well, a couple of weeks ago.
A couple of days ago.
He was actually fighting back against all of these crazier elements of the Republican Party, which is kind of interesting because, you know, he used to be the Tea Party darling, but he was kind of saying, "Hey, we're losing everything here. We better get on the right track when we're talking about immigration and talking about, the Women's Act and things like that." So it's been kind of interesting that he's been so quiet, and yet the few times he's popped up, he's reversed himself. Because it's almost as if he lost an election or something.
Well, as Lawrence said, "Hey, once you run for vice president and lose, you never win again. There has never been a vice president that has run the first time and lost.
I don't care.
And come back.
What you want to say?
It don't happen."
You may like different characters on the show, but, you know, you're there for Herman and his family. You're never going to vote for Eddie.
That's right. Yeah. We're not watching TV to watch Eddie. We're there to watch.
Just like you play with the dragon under the stairs every once in a while. You know, nobody cares what Eddie really does during the rest of the
game. Speaking about Eddie Munster and Herman Munster, the CPAC meeting.
Oh.
I mean, he said the finest political people in the country will be at CPAC.
Oh, you mean they're the rising
Russ Hall, loser. Romney, loser. Perrin, loser. I mean, two strikes, you're out.
Yeah. Hey.
I mean, what, are you kidding me?
Well, there's always Michelle Bachmann. I'm just saying. You know, when in doubt, Michelle.
She lost too.
Yeah, but this is back for people.
And then we got the pizza man. He's going to be there.
Yeah.
Loser.
I'm pretty sure that the cyborg.
The cyborg?
Dark Cheney Vader. He might show. You know,
at
midnight. I'm just saying.
They don't have a long enough cord for him to be plugged into while he's waiting.
You hit it at the end of the show.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. But
here comes
Jamie. Then this vile den of iniquity, CPAC,
by the way,
does not invite the Pillsbury Doughboy. Well, I'm sorry, he's not the Pillsbury Doughboy. Because he said he's trying.
Right.
Chris Christie, the most impressive Republican in the Regressive Party. I said Republican, then I said Regressive. You know.
He's one of the only ones that's doing anything to even get news.
That's why he wasn't invited.
Yeah.
You have to be a loser in order to be invited. That's right. You have to be a loser. We only invite losers. To our meeting. We can't invite anybody that's a winner.
And I mean the kind of losers you can see from Sarah Palin's.
That's correct.
That kind of loser.
Pillsbury Doughboy, Newt Gingrich. He, loser. He's done.
Huh? Newt.
And that squarehead Colonel, whatever his name was, in Florida, who said there was 78 to 81 communists in the Democratic Party. Loser. He just lost.
There in Congress. Let's start the McCarthy trial again.
He's there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but no, Chris Christie.
If you're going to CPAC, your credentials apparently have to be complete and utter trouncing in election and or still at war with the Soviet Union. That's your requirement.
Well, and a loser. You have had to lose realistically this year, the past year, or within the last 4 years, you had to lose an election. But not just lose an election, get beat in an election.
I mean, in a
runoff. Get beat in a any sort of runoff. You have to lose. So Chris Christie had no shot.
Yeah.
No shot.
You know,
of being there.
He was doing things, you know, like rebuilding his state.
Oh, no, you can't rebuild your state. We want people to suffer.
Hey, you know what? That's a thought. Maybe they should have a special CPAC panel and invite just those congressmen who voted against any help for Hurricane Victor.
Oh, speaking about that, before we came on here, what was it that we were looking at?
Oh, they were
talking about King. From New York.
Representative King. Oh, my word. Hey, I don't really like King.
I don't like him either. But he was right over there.
I took my hat off to him today. Holy cow. Look, and this is something that Chris Christie, when he made you remember, it didn't take 5 seconds for Boehner and his other boneheads when they
Boehner? Yes.
At the end of last Congress, even passing the already passed aid. You remember that whole fiasco? And Christie just it took a baseball bat to him and showed him what, you know, the Sopranos was all about, right? But now, King, I love King for this today. So King, he took these fools after completely
Rubino
peeing on themselves and voting against any
Rubio, I should say, Rubino. Rubio goes to New York.
They go up there with the stench of urine upon them.
Rubio.
Show up. and then they beg for money from the victims of the hurricane. What the hell were they thinking? Oh, my God.
Here is the that there was a map that showed all the states that are, and I should have got it down, but I got most of them, that are givers
mm-hmm.
in taxes.
What do we call that? The North.
And the West. the states that give the most money to taxes. As a matter of fact, not
Texas?
Just the most money.
Did you say Texas? To taxes.
Taxes. I can't
understand you.
No, taxes.
Yeah, I remember that.
T-A-X-E-S. They give the most money in taxes and get the less in return back.
Mm-hmm. And by less, you mean the South, but that's the way we say that.
Oh, no. I'm talking about the less in return in goods and trade.
Oh, yeah.
That.
Because they are self-sufficient. So they can take care of
themselves. Now, and I am going to get that clip of Rhett Butler talking to his Southern Confederates. But anyway.
No, it really is.
Yeah. The area was just in the South. It was the South and the entire Midwest.
Yeah. All those things that they like to show on maps on Fox News that are red.
Right.
Look at that.
All those states are the losers that New York City, my home state, pays them so they can survive from the droughts and the tornadoes and the snowstorms and the hurricanes.
Oh, and those little things that happen in between, like roads, telephones, power, those little things that keep states running.
Yes.
That's what taxes pay for, by the way, people. Do you think that the regressive party wants to do away with?
Well, but that's coming out of another budget. Because the budget I'm talking about is the budget that FEMA has for disaster
relief.
And these people, wait till the thaw comes to the Midwest and they find out crops have been ruined because of the 2 feet of snow that's been on the ground for 3 months.
Water?
Yes.
Oh, when they learn what a flood is?
Oh, yes, because it's so flat out there that it's going to be, the Mississippi is going to be flooding Ohio and every place else like a swamp.
Mm-hmm.
Who is going to bail them out?
Which, ironically, when it then flows down the river, it does become.
Yes.
Because I live by those swamps in Louisiana and Mississippi.
That's right. So what are these ungrateful senators
mm-hmm.
who voted against giving money to New York City and Jersey and the surrounding areas that were hit with this hurricane.
Right. And by the way, that word is hurricane. Let me remind all those southern states that were
Florida, Louisiana,
voted against it.
Mississippi.
That thing called
Alabama, Georgia,
and fall,
Texas,
and the rest of the country. That's hurricane season.
It's approaching.
Yes. And they're going to be, there's a famous little word, rue the day. You know, that word rue, they're going to be ruining the day.
The problem is that they can't think farther than their little twiddle. That's the problem.
What is a
twiddle? A twiddle is it's a little thing that some of them have hanging between their legs.
Mm.
But, yeah, so.
It's
mostly twiddle gum.
So these guys, though, let's say again what King did to put them in their place.
Yes.
So these guys who vote against any aid for victims of hurricanes, you know, gleefully, ha ha ha, too bad. We don't need to waste any taxpayer money on those people. They then went up,
begging for money from New York City donors to run for the next election and to be the next, as King said, president of the United States. They came up asking for the very people that they twiddled upon.
They twiddled upon.
Then they said, hey, can you give me some of that yellow smelling gummy you got?
Yeah, well, the thing is that King was so outraged.
I love it.
So outraged by the audacity of these people, and now with the sequester coming,
mm-hmm.
they're gonna get less. Now this is what happened. Representative Peter King, a New York Republican, is furious that Senator Marco Rubio is hitting up New Yorkers for campaign cash after voting against the federal funds to rebuild the region as Superstorm Sandy ravaged the area. In fact, King urged New Yorkers not to give any money to any of his fellow Republicans who voted against Sandy. Nobody on Wall Street, nobody in the financial services, nobody anywhere in New York should give a nickel to these guys. King's tirade is the latest spat to roil the Republican Party, which is already torn over the issues of gay marriage, immigration, and reform. King's fury is aimed at one of the party's possible presidential candidates.
Yeah, this one guy's supposed to be a star.
Be a star, right? Yeah. I am actually very angry, and it's not just a question of being angry. I think New York has to send a signal that we are not going to allow national politicians to vote against New York and really vote against New York in an arbitrary way. And then come to New York and ask New York to finance a campaign for a president.
Mm-hmm.
This is coming from Politico. Politico reported this week that the Florida senator, who has been called the Republican savior, is trying to lock down high roller dollar donors from Wall Street ahead of a potential 2016 campaign. King says it's even worse than his other fellow Republicans who voted against the Sandy aid package, because Rubino is from Florida, a state that has been ravaged by storms in the past and has gotten billions and billions of dollars in hurricane aid.
Yep.
He said Rubino voted against the $50.4 billion in aid without talking to him and other leaders in the state, like New York Governor Andrew Cuomo or Michael Bloomberg.
Right. And this guy, you know, again, the insult and adding to the insult is not only you come up on your knees begging for money from these people, but you've been taking billions from them. That's how your state survived. You know, they've been propping you up for decades.
King went on to say, this is the worst natural disaster we have had in the history in our state, in our region, and just arbitrarily voted no. And then to come in and ask for money to me, if New York does this, then we are just suckers. And New Yorkers are not suckers. To me, it's something we just can't accept. And it's a signal that we have to send that answer to the senators and congressmen who voted against the aid for Sandy and are not going to get rewarded when they come to New York. It's insane. Over the years, I've known so many politicians who almost make a career out of either criticizing New York or voting against New York. And then I come to find out they're having fundraisers on Wall Street or staking out themselves in the summer in the Hamptons. The Republican congressman who represents parts of New York City, Long Island suburbs, say he hasn't spoken to Rubino. I mean, Rubino. Why is he saying Rubino? Rubio.
They all sound like monsters.
Yeah, okay, that's good. King added that Rubio didn't talk to me before he voted against the aid package. I mean, you know, oh, this boy here.
Look, I'm so proud of King. I almost forgive him for being a Republican. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm glad he stood up. I'm glad he's, you know, the Republicans have become such a whipped party that they can't ever step out of line. They can't ever say anything against the party line. And for him to just stand up and call bullshit when it happens, that's
King blasted House Republican leadership, specifically House Speaker John Boehner, when he pulled a Hurricane Sandy relief bill from the floor vote. He was joined by his friends and fellow Republican New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, who also was angry at the vote being pulled after being assured it would be voted on. Since Christie took on Boehner for pulling the funding, Christie was invited to the next month's Conservative Political Action Conference. Despite being one of the most popular governors in the country, he was not invited. I should say invited. Uninvited.
Right.
So
that's what we were talking about earlier with that CPAC.
Right.
But again, I mean, these people are so hateful that sometimes their poison seeps over into even their friends and associates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they hate black people. They hate Hispanics. They hate anybody from somewhere else. They hate anything different. They hate change. They hate gays. They hate everything. You know, and every once in a while, they even hate themselves.
Oh,
that's what I love about
do they?
It's like, but talk about shooting yourself in the foot. Hey, geniuses, if you want a chance at politics, if you want to do anything, especially in a country where your idea of democracy is corporations or people and unlimited money is freedom, if that's your idea, what a genius, don't go and twiddle on Wall Street.
Right.
And insult them and vote against them and then come back and go, oh, but you got, can you spare a five? Give me a break.
I mean, it's just outrageous. You know, it is just outrageous. And I meant to do a little copy of my show, Justified, again.
No, let me paraphrase something.
I have to show you that you got two scenes in two different episodes back to back. I got to show you that are so unbelievable, Justified. You know, he cooked with his gun. So he's looking for this guy who killed a bounty hunter, a friend of his, matter of fact, a woman. And the guy's running low, shooting everybody, and then he sends a message, well, I'm just going to be waiting for you because we need to take this out. So he goes into this bar where he knows the guy's going to be, and he pulls the fire alarm, and he goes over to the bar and says, give me a drink, and the bartender says, everybody's got to leave? He says, yeah, everybody's got to leave. So he looks over at the guy's at the table at the end of the bar, he says to the guy, I could have shot you when I came in. He says, but I know you don't want that guy. He says, no, we're going to stand up and draw. He said, we're going to stand up and draw? He says, yeah. He says, because you weren't going to shoot me. He's all because I didn't shoot you last time. So he opens up his coat and he says, so what makes you think I'm not going to shoot you this time? So the guy's fingers started going back and forth like this. And before he got to his gun, he was shot six times. He said, so what do you think now? I tell you, it was so funny. And I'm going to play that clip again because these people, we talk about Rubio. Rubio, I got it right that time.
Yeah.
Rubio, what? These people are so outrageous. How can they come to a dead-gone place and ask for money and then not help the place that you're supposed to be helping? How is that even remotely possible?
Well, that's what I mean. It's so unintelligent. It's amazing. And what I was going to say is paraphrase the old beggars can't be choosers. I think King just made the point. You can't choose beggars.
Holy cow.
I love the word audacity. With the what you said earlier, with the audacity to show up with their hand out after giving these people the finger. I mean, are you kidding me?
It is. I mean, it just fails me. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's like, well, hey, you know what? We can screw everybody that there is, because these people don't have memories.
Right.
They're all robots like I am. Because, you know, I don't remember what I did to him.
No. Well, hey, you know, when you don't have integrity, you don't think anybody else does either, right?
Oh, my God.
Now, this is a guy, literally, he's like walking on the broken rubble of someone's home.
Right.
And then said, hey, did you find any money in here?
Yeah, can you loan me some money for my presidential campaign? I'm going to be running. And my friend, well, I don't know if I'm running. This is just an exploratory campaign.
Yeah.
So I might not even run.
Yeah, I just want money.
But I want to keep the money anyway.
Yeah. Give me a break.
Okay. And what we have on the line with us right now is the president of the North Carolina Black Leadership Caucus, Mr. Walter Rogers. Mr. Walter Rogers, hello.
Mr. Lawson, how are you today?
I am doing much better. I didn't talk about it yet with my folks on the air, but I have been sick, had to get an MRI. Oh, we're going to be talking about health care, and I am going to be ripping some hospitals here in North Carolina.
I know that's right.
I am going to be ripping them, these criminal establishments.
Well,
that
sadly, Mike, they're not just North Carolina, it's everywhere.
Oh, absolutely. You're absolutely correct.
Instead of a health care system, instead of just health care, what we have is a health care business in America.
That's correct. A health care business. It's almost like the prison system.
Yeah.
It's becoming just like that.
It's nothing to do with justice. It's
no.
Profit.
Absolutely. It's all about profit. Well, Mr. President, I'm sorry I had a run out on you 2 weeks ago, because you know how bad off I was.
Well, and, Michael, that's okay. Everybody there understood. We just hate that you missed the banquet. We had a super time at the Shell Island Resort. As you know, this was my fourth year, and Moses Carey was the speaker, did a super job.
Mm-hmm.
And everything went over great with the workshops that Saturday morning, turned out super. And we want to thank Democracy North Carolina and a bunch of other people who really made a difference.
And I want to tell you, when I got sick, I said, well, I got to go home. So when I checked out of the hospital, it was so bad, I called to find out where the nearest emergency room was.
And
we talked about it, as you remember, and I said, you know, maybe I should drive there. But then I said, they might give me something that might put me to sleep, and I called back. Do you know my room was gone already? It was gone.
Hey, we were packed out.
Oh,
the hotel
was
packed out, Michael. We people really showed up. And I mean, in light of the potential for there being some snow accumulation, people really came out.
Well, I tell you, and I was driving back in that snow because it really snowed on 74. I want to tell you, it really snowed. And it was snowing so hard, I had to slow down to 25 miles an hour because it was almost blizzard-like conditions. That's how bad it was for about 40 or 50 miles.
Michael, you just imagine in that 100 miles that you drove from the ocean through the flatlands of North Carolina to the hills of Mecklenburg County.
It was 204 miles.
Yep.
204 miles. And
if it wasn't for the snow, you enjoyed it, wouldn't you?
Oh, no, because I was in such a bad condition. I tell you, I sat in that car, and it wasn't for that lumbar, and I got in the correct seat and in the position, and I did not move for that 3 to 4 hours going back. It took me 4 hours going back because of the snowstorm, but And it was just a little bit of pain. I didn't feel it. But when I got back to the house, I went directly to the emergency room. My wife was home. I could not get out of the car. It took her and one of my daughters that was here to help me to get out of the car. It was so bad. But we'll talk about that later on the show. But I want to know about the things that went on at the banquet. Tell us.
Oh, well, you know that Mr. Moses Carey was the speaker. I think Mr. Charles Warren from over in Brunswick County received this special recognition and a plaque for his work with planning and promoting the event. He really put his shoulder to the wheel, and because of him, he was the reason why I bet you 40 or 50% of those people were there himself, along with his spouse. We had two people from Brunswick County that received special recognition for their contribution to their community and keeping their shoulders to the wheel. We had one person from New Hanover County that received the same thing. You know, Mike, you'd be surprised, the people who work every day for the benefit of low-wealth people and people of color. Every since the first slaves came to this country, they have been people fighting for their freedom. Some of them you've never heard their names because they used to not put black history in your school book. And there is a lot of stuff, but you know, it's not fair but worry, but 12 months a year ought to be Black History Month. Because there's just that much history that has been covered over that really needs to be shared and discovered.
Well, then maybe it should be maybe like they have a Year of the Woman. Maybe it should be a Year of the Black History Month, or Black History, a Year of Black History. Maybe that's what it should
be. Well, hey, now that sounds like a super idea. And maybe that will be something we need to think about in 2014. Is the Year of Black History, and let it run from January 1 to December 31st.
That sounds very good. Maybe that's something that the Black Leadership Caucus can start to push.
You know, that would be a great idea, but what would even be more exciting if it came from the Charlotte-Mecklenburg County chapter and the state just joined in with you and supported it. I'm sure the everybody else across these other 99 counties would do the same.
Well, I think that will be something that I will speak about at our next meeting.
And that is a major election year, too.
Absolutely. That sounds good.
An excellent idea, Michael. We are inventing something here as we talk.
Absolutely. I mean, our newly formed Mecklenburg County chapter of the Black Leadership Caucus, North Carolina Black Leadership Caucus, and
congratulations. I hope you got all your ducks in a row and you're ready. And it may be that either at the state meeting or at the banquet in Monroe in April that we can present you with your charter.
Oh, absolutely. That'd be great.
Wonderful.
We would love for that to happen, and we will be there strong. And as a matter of fact, you know, at our next meeting, I think we're going to, I will see if I get in contact with the right people to see if we can start a movement for a Year of Black History.
All right. Now, today is the first day of sequestration.
Yes. It begins at midnight tonight. But, you know, a lot of people, Wall Street, don't think it's going to mean anything. They just keep going up and up and up. And a lot of people are walking around like nothing's happening. But if they say it's going to happen and something is happening, you know it always happens to the low wealth person first.
You know that's right. Last hired, first fired. But what's important, Michael, is how the Tea Party has been able to take over the Republican Party.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how it has been able to twist John Boehner's arm. There are a lot of things that he might want to do, but if he were to do them, he would lose his party chairmanship, and he would rather sacrifice the people of this nation in their economic condition than to say, to hell with a party position, I'm going to do the right thing.
And you know, this reminds me, they always say the captain goes down with the ship. The captain of the Titanic remained on board. Well, that was not something that the captain of the Titanic and the people should be proud of. He went down with that ship because he knew he was damn wrong by not watching out and going full speed ahead and hitting an iceberg.
So
he was either going to be hung when he got back, or he said, look, let me go down with the ship. Maybe they'll think I was a good guy. No, we don't think you were a good guy. You screwed up.
Yeah. Well, I tell you something else, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
These Republican congressmen that we have, such as Richard Husson in the 8th District, you've probably got at least two in one or two in Mecklenburg County. We need to talk with those people. We need to get a better understanding with them, and we need to understand whether they are concerned about the economics and condition of their people or whether they think their obligation is to lockstep with John Boehner and the Tea Party.
Well, if they got elected in the 8th District, they got elected because they're in lockstep. Now, maybe they don't want to be in lockstep, and maybe we can say, hey, look, if you don't go lockstep, you might be able to see a few little things that we can help you out with. But if you're in lockstep, you can kiss your butt goodbye. Because we ain't.
Well, I think that this nation is growing concerned, and they are beginning to say, we don't like what the Tea Party is doing to
mm-hmm.
this nation. We don't like what they're doing. We are not going to continue to put up with it. And I think that at some point, the people of this nation will have an opportunity to decide how well they like the Tea Party and what they want to do about it. But until then, we just have to work to help, try to help these elected officials to understand. You know, they have to fight, Michael. Life in this world is a fight. I say, you know, as a 65-year-old black man, I probably know that better than any other race. But life in this world is a fight from the beginning to the end and having to prove yourself over, over, and over again.
Now, wait a minute. That sounds just like what Mitt Romney said.
He had to prove himself over and over again.
So you mean you're just like Mitt Romney?
No. Mr. Romney and I have nothing in common. I was not born with a silver spoon.
Oh,
my dad didn't give me several million dollars and said hello. The only thing my dad could do is say, son, I love you and give me advice.
But Mitt Romney said that that's all his daddy did for him.
Well, Nick Romney, one thing you could say about him, he had no problem with lying. Whatever way the wind blows and whatever was in his best interest is the way he went.
Yeah. I want to take a moment to point something out, because you brought up the Tea Partiers, and you've also mentioned the importance of, you know, we're coming up on an election year, a very important election year, because it's going to be a congressional year. People need to realize, you know, they treat the Tea Partiers as if they're just a little bit of a more conservative side of the regular Republican. But they're not. People need to look at their rhetoric, listen to what they have said and espoused, and realize that they are the literal embodiment of government isn't the solution, government is the problem. They are here not to build up anything. They are here only to tear down everything. You know, these are guys that when they were running, trying to get the presidential nod, their platforms said things like, day one, we're going to eliminate, you know, every other branch and agency of government. We're going to do away with the Department of Education. We're going to do away with all foreign aid and services. We're going to do away with, you know, every department we don't like. That is their form of government, and that's why they are ecstatic with the sequestration that's going through right now, with the destruction of the government by choking it off with no money. It's just like, you know, what's his name? He used to always talk in the Reagan years about drowning it in a bathtub.
Yeah.
That's what they're proud of. They're proud of this. This is their dream come true, because a starving government is less government. You know, a weakened government is less. People don't—they're not paying attention. This isn't politics as usual. This is basically actually anti-politics. It's anti-American. It's anti-government.
And the thing is that John Boehner, we were talking about John Boehner, and you had mentioned that John Boehner would be willing to work with President Obama. He was willing to work with him, and they could have had this done 2 years ago. But the Tea Party grabbed his coattails and said, if you don't, you're out. Well, the thing is that he's been in government long enough. He can retire on a huge pension. He can get a job anywhere he wants. He should be willing to go out with dignity instead of under the boot of the Tea Party. And he should say, well, if you want to Tea Party me in my next election, go ahead and do it. But I'm working for the United States of America and not the Tea Party.
Yeah. And they can
say it's Michael, the people, the elected officials are not as sharp as the Pope. See, the Pope knew it was time for him to get out because things weren't looking or smelling right. And
that's
he just
right.
decided he didn't want to be a part of it. But you
that's
don't
right.
get people who are in elected office to retire or resign. They like the idea of being able to run something and tell people what to do.
We've seen them, they'll say that until their legs literally fall off.
Yeah, their legs literally fall off is right. Well, you know, speaking about staying there brings me back to Mr. Gravitas himself, the governor, King McCrory, who has begun to make his peasants pay for the disloyalty to him when he was the mayor of Charlotte, North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
His first big grab was, give me that $3 or $4 billion that the airport has in Charlotte. I'm going to take that money from them.
Yeah,
I'm going to kill these people. And then his second thing was, hey, you know, he's only been a employer of Duke Power for 29 years. Now, wait a minute. When he was the mayor, he was also getting paid by Duke Power. Now, how the hell is that legal?
Yeah, totally wrong.
Michael.
Yes.
The people of North Carolina allowed themselves to be duped. McCrory would not answer a lot of questions, would not release his taxes, all of that stuff, and yet they were ignorant enough to vote for him. You just don't eat. Common sense says you don't elect people that don't want to share the taxes with you, don't want to tell you what how they are generating their income. That's important stuff.
Are you talking about Romney?
Yeah, Romney. Yeah. Romney didn't make it either, did he?
No, he certainly did.
Well, this is a pattern with you.
Then you must be right, because the people in Charlotte and Mecklenburg County, and I mean, we knew that for years. We knew that for years about him. That's why for 8 years, every time he ran for governor, he lost the county that he was mayor, the city that he was mayor in, and the county. He lost it.
Because
we knew.
Michael, yes? You have to be willing to stand against wrong, and you have to be able to stand and tell the truth. Sometimes it may cost you, but at least they say he has the integrity to stand there, take the ballot to him, and tell the truth. See, Mecklenburg County knew a whole lot more about McCrory than the rest of North Carolina. It may be that the rest of the Republican Party knew, but there are some people out there, and I'm kind of mixing apples and oranges here, but they just don't have the wit, the knowledge, and sometimes they'll follow other people's suggestions, even though their economic status may be worse than yours.
Well, what do you say? Did you say the wit and knowledge? Yeah.
They don't have the wit and knowledge.
Sometimes they do have to think for themselves.
They rather listen to what somebody else suggests to them, what they tell them.
Well, they do have the wit, but it's called half-wit.
I mean positive wit, not nitwit.
I'm sorry. The second thing he did was sign the bill of the law that cut the weekly unemployment benefits from maximum of $500 to $350.
And cut
the state benefits from 26 weeks to 12. Now, you tell me. We talked about this before I got sick, or while I was sick, waiting to get my luggage out of the place. How the heck can you live on $350 a week? How is that
Michael,
even? Where?
Michael? Those people that was growing that $500 unemployment are people in dire need and probably did not vote Republican.
You're right.
Okay, so, he has no compassion about that. He says that they probably did not vote for him anyway.
And if you're on unemployment, then...
You're not a real Republican anyway, because us Republicans take care of each other. We give you the children jobs at Duke Powell or some of these other places since he become governor.
No, that's not true, because in this country, these Tea Party regressive nitwits, halfwits, don't care whether you're Democrat or Republican. Because more than 70% of the people out there, or about 75%, are not white. And they always get the boot. But the problem is that these people have gone so far, they are now affecting their own white population, and they're screwing them too. Then we are a lot more, probably two or three times as many, or four times as many.
I told you, Mike, they're anti-government.
They're anti-people.
Yes.
They're just anti-people.
I just hope that all of our society is able now to understand that the social and economic deprivation is not a racial thing. It is purely economic, and the people don't care what color you are, how fat or thin you are. It's just that if you don't have it, we don't want you with it.
Absolutely. But see, that's not actually true, too, because McCrory, when he took away
the benefits and took away the amount of weeks you can be on unemployment, he gave his cabinet an 8% raise.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's right. He got, they got the money where he cut the benefits from 500 to 350. He took that money and gave it to his cabinet.
That's an old Republican.
How about that? The Democratic governor couldn't find any money, but the Republican governor didn't have any problem.
As Thomas said, that's the Republican redistribution of wealth.
Excellent terminology. Redistribution of wealth by the state Republican. Oh, one other thing I wanted to ask you all about. Robin Hayes, Democracy North Carolina, Blue Dot North Carolina, and them, him filing complaint that some of the 501c3 organizations in North Carolina, as you know, Robin Hayes is the chairman of the North Carolina Republican Party.
So is he?
Filed suit against several North Carolina nonprofits saying that they had supported the Democratic Party in their activities.
Really?
Either one of y'all hear about that?
No, not yet. Let us know. But it sounds logical. So tell us.
Another case of divide and conquer.
Yeah.
Divide and conquer, distraction, and all of that other stuff that means we're trying to push you back in any way we possibly can.
I mean, it's just, now, they filed suit with who are the people that they're suggesting were Democratic operatives?
Ask that question again, Mac.
Who are they suggesting that were Democratic operatives?
It's an organization.
Oh,
non-profit organization. Like Democracy North Carolina. I think Blue Dot North Carolina, and I don't know who else. I was told that there were some others named in the suit. He filed a complaint against them, said they had violated the 501c3, but nobody seems to be able to find anywhere anybody's violated anything except Robin.
Their crime is that they may have supported a liberal somewhere.
Why didn't he win? Did he say that's the reason why he lost?
Well, he wants to be governor, so.
Oh, he wants to be governor.
He'll be kicking around in some of everything.
Oh, he wants to be governor, so him and Pat will have a big fight, huh?
Yeah.
So that means Pat will have to really go negative to try to really outdo Huckabee.
Hayes.
Huckabee. Hayes did the same thing. He really have to go negative to outdo Hayes.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just no way. How can this man, who was a governor for 16 years in mayor in 16 years in Charlotte, North Carolina, the liberal bastion of North Carolina, how could he be our governor?
Michael, the question is, does the zebra stripe change? Or if people put paint on the zebra and you're able to get away for a while, what happens when it rains?
That's right, you better. Better have a shed to hide.
You got your zebra back.
Some of these political parties have been
good at trying to make sugar out of what?
Well,
tell
us now. What is the agenda now for the North Carolina Black Leadership Caucus? And tell us why you thought to come up with the letting the counties have their own individual units.
Why did we choose to come up with the county chapters as opposed to congressional districts?
Yes.
Is that your question?
Yes, that's the question.
Okay. The reason we did that, Michael, is in a lot of congressional districts, they're not really organized as a congressional district. And it is our hopes that by doing them by county, when we get enough counties in a congressional district, we can then put together a congressional district chapter. A prime example would be Brunswick County and New Hanover County. That's two of the eight counties that make up the 7th district. Hopefully in the coming months, we'll be able to get maybe Robertson or Duplin or Pender or Bladen or some of the other counties to register their chapter. And by them doing that, they've already began to talk about a 7th Congressional District Black Leadership Caucus. And that's a good thing.
All right.
But that is our reason for doing that. Sometimes instead of eating the elephant, you go for something smaller and let it grow.
So what would be the protocol then? What would be the protocol? Do the county chapters answer to the congressional chapter?
Well, the hierarchy would say first comes your state organization, then we do have some congressional districts, then your county chapters. In an election, the congressional district gets so many votes, the county chapters would get so many votes.
Okay,
don't ask me how many votes that is off the top of my head, Michael, because I can't tell you.
Well, if you ask me now,
I'll tell you next week.
What would be the protocol? Would the county chapter have to answer to the district chapter?
Well, your county chapter, by rights, would have the same access to anything that the congressional district chapter would have.
With the exception of,
you can be part of the congressional district and still have your own camp. Your membership may well be members of the congressional district as well as the county chapter.
Right. But what I'm saying is, what would be the protocol? Would the congressional district chapter direct the county in their dealings?
In their daily dealings. I hope I'm asking this properly. If not, you may have to break down a little bit more. But now, I live in Scotland County. We have not established the Scotland County chapter yet, but we're going to.
Mm-hmm.
I also live in the 8th District. My first allegiance would probably be to my county chapter, then to my district chapter, and then to my state organization.
Yeah.
We will have county meetings. We talk about some of the things that we want to do in our county and some of the things that are exclusively continuous to our county. Then when we go to the state meeting, we listen to what is being said at the state meeting, projects that we can all do as a group from each one of the county. And then when we go to the state meeting, we listen to statewide projects.
Well, no, I understand that, but yeah, you missed my point. Does the county chapter, will they have to answer to the congressional chapter? Do they take orders from the congressional chapter?
Do you take orders from the state? If you got it, you have bylaws that are issued by the state.
Right.
And as long as you are adhering to your bylaws according to the state and your activities, then if the congressional district has a problem with something you're doing, they would have to go to the state. They wouldn't have the authority to tell you you can or cannot do thus and so.
All right. Well, see, that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted to know. Would the congressional chapter have the authority to dictate what the county is supposed to do?
You run into a problem. What you do is contact your state chair, and he or she will make sure that whatever your issue is resolved in the best interest of all parties.
Okay, so then what would be the real activity for the congressional district?
For the congressional district?
Yeah.
What is normally the agenda for the congressional district?
Mm-hmm.
Working to help grow the counties, helping to find out what the issues are across the district, working to accomplish things that is going to benefit the people as a whole and to address issues that are relative to the entire congressional district. And when you're talking about economic issues, when you're talking about representation, whether it's the state house or Congress or even with your governor or your president, over my last 4 years, I've been to the White House twice representing the people of North Carolina and especially the 8th Congressional District as well as the North Carolina Black Leadership Caucus.
Mm-hmm.
So, irregardless of what the issue is, what the concern is, I always say you should always work for the benefit of the people.
Okay.
As long as you're working for the benefit of the people and people
mm-hmm.
know that you're working for the benefit of the people, you can get
right.
a lot of stuff done. It's when people begin to let their selfishness show. When people begin to let their selfishness show, and especially to say you're your own man, you're not concerned about the people.
I understand. That's, you're absolutely correct.
That's like suicide, isn't it?
Yeah, sort of. Now, before another, I want to just get off of this for a minute. What was it like here? Since I am from New York, what was it like here during the 1965 Voting Rights Act when it was passed?
Michael, it wasn't just here. It was all across the nation.
Well, no.
It was ugly, Michael. And how many jelly beans in a jar, how many bubbles are in a bar of soap and all other type ignorant stuff. And in a lot of instances, at a lot of board of elections, it was a joke. It was a joke. And that Supreme Court justice that stuck his foot in his mouth yesterday or the day before yesterday, I bet you he wished he could have that back. That was real ignorant. And if I'm not mistaken, what is his last name?
Scalia.
Is he... I'm wanting to think that doesn't sound like a normal white or black name to me. I won't talk about his ethnicity, but it certainly sounds to me like somebody took a minute to help somebody, and that's how he got where he is.
Well, maybe.
Unless he showed up with a bunch of money and was able to buy his way through.
No, he didn't.
You know. So, you know, sometimes when people think they've arrived, they forget the people that they left from or where they are. And I kind of think that's the way he is right now. I think he kind of forgot where home is.
Well, it's what's that old saying? I always remember this old saying because I saw it once on one of the Abbott and Costello shows. He says, be careful on the people you meet up on your way up the ladder because you might meet them on the way down.
You know that's right. You know that is right. But I tell you one thing. I think he went outside what his responsibility is for Supreme Court justice.
And you know that just might hurt them and stop them from killing Section 5. That statement of his might just be the inflame point or the flame point where these people would say, you know what? If we pass this now, what he said, we're all marked
for
this. Yeah.
And John Roberts said to Reverend Edward Hales from the Vanta Project, who was on just before you, I said, John Roberts wants this to be his court. The people that were saying this, ever since he made that decision that nobody thought he was going to make last year. Now, and he has worked, John Roberts, has worked for 30 years to get rid of the Voting Rights Act. When Ronald Reagan first hired him, that was his job. And now he had it within grasp, and Scalia, who thinks he should have been the...
Let the cat out of the water.
Scalia was upset when Roberts was appointed because he thought he should be chief judge. And now he's almost, 80, 77, 78? He ain't never going to be chief judge when this man here who's 12 is the chief judge. So he knows that's over with. So now he made this statement. Now, I don't know if Scalia did that on purpose because he can't stand the position that he's not going to be chief judge.
I just think he's
But he's a racist. So,
yeah.
But you know, a lot of racists don't say that out in public.
Well, you know something else, Michael?
Yes.
This took me 60-some years to learn that one thing a bigot does not want you to know is that he is a bigot.
That's right. Absolutely.
Now, you know that? Have you ever noticed that?
Absolutely.
The worst of bigots don't want you to know that they are a bigot.
You're absolutely correct with that.
But all right. The gentleman really, really did stick his foot in his mouth.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think he'll be remembered for that for a long time.
Well, he'll always remember it because he'll probably die sitting on the Supreme Court. I mean, because it's a life sentence, and he's not going to go anywhere. But, you know.
Is that an entitlement?
Yes, that's an entitlement. Now, he's talking about entitlement. That's an entitlement. The thing is, though, we also have that other fool sitting on the Supreme Court, Clarence. I don't know what I'm doing here, Thomas, but our Clarence, I got here by affirmative action, Thomas. The problem is, though, again, he said nothing because that's what he's required to do.
You know, the sad thing is, you know, Bush, they appointed this guy. They thought they were appointing an ally, you know, someone for the cause.
Right.
And, you know, it was like a twofer. Hey, we also got, the first black one. Yeah, you know, whatever. No, these guys get nothing. They got a lump.
They got a lump.
He just sits there on the bench going,
he just votes all the way Scalia tells him to vote, and that's the end of it.
It's a fact.
You know. And it's really
you know,
it is sad.
way to say it, because at least with, you know, the one thing I'll say about Roberts, when he talks and discusses and does things, you can at least see the flickering candle of intelligence in there. So this guy is actually, I can't, it's an embarrassment.
It's an embarrassment. It really is an embarrassment. But, hey, can it be any more embarrassment than Pat Robertson? Can anything, did you hear what Pat Robertson did, Walter, today, yesterday or the day before?
I don't think so.
There was this woman who called into his show and said, Reverend Robertson, can you please tell me what I am to do? My daughter went to what's the place where you get the clothes?
Went to the
place where you buy clothes. You not buy clothes. You go there to get clothes. Well, if you don't have any.
Like Hep and Hand or something?
No, it's the place you go down to if you're, you know, you got burnt out and you got to go down there and get some clothes.
Yeah. It's kind of like a support center.
Right. Well, she went down there and she says, I was told that there's devils in some of these clothes.
The devil, right.
And he answered, yes, there is devils in those clothes, so you have to wash them very carefully. He says, but not all the time.
What?
So, I mean, it's...
Tell me about where did the devils come from in the clothes?
Robertson and the clothes. Just type it up. We're going to type it up right now. But this is what he said. I mean, it was so unbelievable. And they've been playing. I'm surprised you missed that about him. Was, he told the woman, yes, you got, you know, wash those clothes. He could.
You got to wash the devils right out of there.
You got to wash the devils.
Well, if you could wash, yeah, I feel sure if people felt like they could wash the devil right out of them, they probably put Pat Robertson in a tub of soap. That's what I think about that.
I forgot the name of the store. How can I forget the name of the store? It's the place where you go to buy. You don't buy clothes there. What is the name? Oh, I'll get it to you in a minute here. I just can't think of it. It was so funny. No, it's we're talking about the guy with the let me see if I dig it up. He was talking about that you have to make sure that you're it's one of the stores where you can go get clothes. How do we get around this when people are so vulnerable
to the stupid?
How do we get around this? What do you do?
Especially when it's situations where you really need to but cannot ignore it because you have to respond to it.
It's goodwill.
Goodwill. Goodwill sweater.
Yeah, sweater.
You know our good friend Jonathan Turley? Yes.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. The devil is Right.
So Pat Robertson's back with a glimpse into the mind of the religiously unhinged. As a matter of fact, he talks about how demons can latch on to garments. And so before putting on satanic sweater, it's the point.
I mean, people are believing that nonsense, that devils are in the clothes now.
Well, you got to understand, that little girl's head was spinning around, and she sprayed green all over the garment. Now, there may have been a devil in there, I'm just saying.
He said the demonic spirits attach themselves to clothes and other items at Goodwill stores and wonder what she should do about it. This is what the woman said. Pat Robinson said, can demonic spirits attach themselves to inanimate objects? The answer is yes. But I don't think every sweater you get from Goodwill has demons in it. It ain't going to hurt you anything to rebuke any spirit that happen to have attached themselves to your clothes. Now,
there's a point that I'd like to hear. It says that Robertson related a story then of how a witch successfully put a spell on a ring that a little girl got. And he said, I think he's confusing that story after he watched The Hobbit with Gollum and his precious.
I mean, you know, how can we, when this man is on the air every single day, night, afternoon, spreading this garbage. We have Rush Limbaugh on the air every single day and night, even repeats on Saturday and Sunday. We have Hannity. We got O'Reilly. They have taken people. They have brainwashed people only to think what they say and no one else.
But this is what we're up against. Look, you've got on one side a Harvard law professor sitting in the White House trying
right.
to do the best job he can. And on the other side, you got demon-haunted sweaters going, he's a communist! He's a fascist! He's a king! He's a dictator! Beware! Cast out the demon!
Yes, sir. We got a Harvard law professor in the White House. A Harvard Law professor who was the head of the Harvard Law Review, and these people are trying to say
the demons are in sweaters.
And he could not get into any institution because he wasn't smart enough. Because a lopsided head nitwit like Donald Trump said so.
Well, look, you get what you pay for. This demon-haunted clothing guy. You know, he was in a scandal back years ago. Not only is
And we lost Mr. Walter.
But, you know, Robertson was in the Blood Diamond scandal. He was getting
Correct.
A lot of his money out of Africa, getting out of war zones, when people were out there butchering each other with machetes. And this quote-unquote man of God, you know, here casting demons out of a fabric.
Man of
is,
God.
You know, he's
Man
sports people. He's uses people. I mean, look, that's what these people are. They're just users and liars and haters and turn people against people. I mean, look at Rush. He's like eating Oxycontin like it's candy, and he's flying down to the Caribbean so he gets hookers. Now, you remember this whole, you know, and then he's talking about, first about family values, and we got to throw out, you know, the other part.
And before we forget, I got to play this short thing with Senator Graham and the Milwaukee police chief, Edward Flynn.
All right, Graham, huh?
Edward Flynn is the Milwaukee police chief, and he was giving testimony about why we got to keep AR-15s and M-16s
on the street,
off
right?
the street. And Graham, who the coward has never stepped a foot out of this country to face a bullet being fired at him, even though he is a military officer, but only as a lawyer, who says he owns an M-16 himself. And I question, why does he need an M-16? But, all right, we'll go back to that. Let's hear what the police chief who wrecked Graham.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Milwaukee, Wisconsin's police chief, Edward Flynn, called out Senator Lindsey Graham for parroting NRA talking points regarding background checks. Senator Graham, who says he owns an AR-15, also says existing laws should be enforced but Flynn pointed out that he and other law enforcement officers aren't interested in paper chases. They are focused on preventing people from getting guns illegally.
Just for the record, from my point of view, Senator, purpose of the background check.
How many cases have you made? How many cases?
It doesn't matter. It's a paper thing.
Well,
I want to stop 76. I want to finish the answer.
Well, no, I'm.
I want to stop 76,000 people from buying guns illegally. That's what a background check does.
AR-15
if you think we're going to do paperwork prosecution, you're wrong.
He wanted to say, but he, if you saw the testimony live, you could see it. He caught it before it came out of his mouth and changed it. He wanted to say, you must be crazy, but he didn't say crazy. You must be wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Not like, almost like the blah people that Santorum said. He wanted to say, you must be crazy. And he should have said it's crazy, because what is Graham going to do to him? I don't think nothing.
Well, again, if you notice, when he is asked a question, then Graham wouldn't even let him answer.
But the Milwaukee police chief talked over him.
Yeah.
And that's why the people applauded in the background.
Oh, yeah.
And then Senator Feinstein has said, please, can we not have any applause, even though you guys were right?
Facts over rhetoric. It's just... these people have nothing on their side.
We didn't get our talking points in on Medicare because Dr. Grace didn't come in. But I want to give you a little bit of what happened. I want to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that I am pissed. The daggone, all these doctors who have sold their souls for a dime, to get involved in group medicine under hospital cares are not doing the job that they should. Well, I shouldn't say the doctors are not doing the job. The doctor is doing the job, but after it leaves the doctor's hand, the patient does not get the care, the direct care, and the quick care that they could. It's not the doctor's fault. But if the doctors didn't sell out to join them with more money, it wouldn't happen.
Well,
I had a severe, I mean the worst ever sciatic attack that was so severe, I was literally screaming at the top of my lungs and crying. I went to the emergency room. They took x-rays. Of course, that's not going to show anything because sciatic is a nerve problem. I was set up to get an MRI. 11 days later, I got my MRI. I am not someone who's indigent. I have more insurance to fill up 16 freaking bottles, houses, cars. It's not that either. But it's the bureaucracy because they want more than one person to handle it so they can claim more money. That's all it is. They give it, the doctor gives the notes to one person, that person gives it to another 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 person. And before you know, it's 11 days, and I still haven't gotten any pain. I still haven't gotten any pain relief. I don't know what's wrong. I'm taking medications. The medication's not working because they don't know what to give you because they cannot, they have not done a diagnostic test because they have not done the MRI yet. Now, if this can happen to me, what the hell is happening to people who don't have any insurance? Who walk into the emergency room and say, I'm in pain, I'm dying, I don't have a doctor. Do they just give them aspirin and send them on their way?
Yeah. Look, this is what happens when you have a system for profit. Instead of for care, it's for profit. So, you know, and sometimes it's not the doctor's fault.
It's not his fault because he joined them.
That's become corrupt. Now, they have to, you know, go to school and get 87,000 bills for that. Then they have to go and join a company to pay that
bill.
And then that company tells them,
what to do.
What they're going to do and how they're going to do it. And these insurance companies and all are for profit. So they go.
And they control the hospitals.
Yeah, they go through their binder of information that you got to go through every step of the way. Like you said, of handing it off to the next person, to the next. You know, get a referral to this, get a referral to that. You know, because it's all for profit. It's not about care. It's about profit. So you went through weeks without any diagnostic and, hence, proper care, and you ended up, suffering.
Huh, did I suffer?
Yeah. And when it could have just been, solved that day. You know, they could have started doing this.
The thing is that even, if I would have went to my normal neurologist,
mm-hmm.
who is not under a hospital association, he would have faxed it or called it or sent it directly to the insurance company so the insurance company could have sent it right back to authorize it. The problem is when you go into an emergency room, it's an emergency.
Right.
It's not like, he's got a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But what makes it worse? What makes it worse? When I called up this hospital and I finally got to the person I needed to speak to after being transferred three times, I told the woman, suppose I was having an appendix attack.
Mm-hmm.
She said to me, but you didn't. And the Lord she needs to thank the Lord that I don't remember her name. And I didn't write it down because I would be blasting it right now. She ought to thank the Lord because I was so taken aback when she said that. But I was in so much pain at the time, I did not know what to do. And to this point right now, I have so much drugs in me. If I would have had a drink, I'd probably drop dead. The pain was so severe. I have never had pain. If I had a knife, I would have cut off my leg. That's how bad the pain was.
Right. And again, sciatica is a terrible thing, but fairly common. You know, back pain, pinched nerves.
Which I have.
Joints, things like that, right, are common. And you hit the nail on the head. Here you are.
Speaking about nails, I feel the nails in my leg.
In the military of our country, a person who worked for the government, for private industries, a person who is well-respected in the community, got your own home, got your own cars, job, wife, family, everything's good. You're not out in the ditch, you're not crawling through the garbage dump out back of the McDonald's, And yet this happened to you. So, just imagine what happens to the poor person or the person who's laid off or the person who doesn't have, even though they got a job, doesn't have insurance or whatever.
So it doesn't have the ability to know how to get a reaction. And here's what happened. I raised hell with my insurance company. They said, Mr. Lawson, we haven't gotten anything from them. I said, what do you mean you haven't gotten anything? He said, it left 10 days ago.
Yeah.
So, no. I called up the woman, and this is when she told me, this is when it happened that, but it didn't. She says, I'm looking at your request for MRI right now on my desk. And I said, then why the hell are you talking to me? Why aren't you sending it?
Yeah.
That's what I told you.
You're looking at it.
That's right.
Why is it on your desk
and
not in their hands?
And then let me tell you, the next day, the very next day, my insurance company called me to tell me that they were okaying it. They got it the next day. Well, the same day, but they called me the next day.
But again,
and one day later, my MRI was being set up. So the thing is, it was just being held. It was being held because maybe not enough people have picked it up that they can charge for it. That's what it is.
Or even if they give the benefit of doubt, it's just lost in the sea of bureaucracy of all this junk.
And this is what the Affordable Care Act is scheduled to do. They're going to get rid of all this bureaucracy. They're going to streamline it. So they don't have to get rid of services. The Affordable Care Act will streamline and make it less of a delivery system to 16 different people in the office where it's supposed to be sent from. There won't be handled by 15 different people in order to get it out to someone else for an okay.
It's going to lower the cost, hence make it affordable, and focus on care.
Care.
Yeah, Affordable Care Act. But that's exactly why we had this decades-long debate in this country and fight and pass this bill, is to correct this problem right here. So you can die in bureaucracy.
We have a few more minutes here, and I just want to say that I saw the Academy Awards, and I want to tell you, McFarlane is nice, but you know, it went over so many people's heads that was a bad place for him to be, because a lot of his things just went flat because people don't understand his humor. That was a very bad pick.
Oh, you're talking about the host.
That the host.
Okay.
I think it ran zip, 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 zip. I was surprised. I thought Lincoln would win. I hadn't seen Argo. I was scheduled to see it, all these movies that week, but I was sick that entire week when my problem occurred. So, didn't chance to see it. But we're going to leave you now because it's time to leave. And I wish they would have devoted more time to James Bond, but we'll talk about that next week. This has been The Last Word.